Episode 29, Diana Lund Nordstrom.
I think it all ties together. We're not just business people or just reflective people or just yoga teachers. We are humans, right?
You're listening to the Tailor Fit Wellness Podcast, where we explore wellness topics from A to Z so that we can take an active approach to improving our quality of life. I am so happy to have Diana Lund Nordstrom here with us today. Thank you so much for joining us, Diana. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. It's amazing. Thank you for letting me join you on your podcast. I'm really grateful for that.
Oh gosh, I'm so excited for our conversation. I would love it if you would let us know a little bit more about yourself and how you came to do what you do, so our listeners can get to know who you are.
Sure. I'm gonna take it back a little bit, and I'm gonna try and keep it short so you know in advance. So I always like getting ideas and helping people and like doing stuff, new stuff, not inventing, but like developing concepts and stuff like that. So yeah. I've been having my own business on and off with different things next to having my job for a long time. Mm-hmm. But then 3 years ago in the summer of 18, my dad died. And it was kind of, it was sudden, but it kind of wasn't, or it wasn't, but it kind of was, because he'd had cancer, but he got declared cancer free. He turned 70 and we had his birthday, and that was really good. And he started getting pneumonia. I still can't pronounce that, but you get what I mean,
pneumonia,
right?
Yeah.
And he was just keep getting worse and worse, and the medicine they were giving him didn't work. Mm-hmm. So they scanned his lungs and they were like, we can't really see anything on your lungs. So a week after that, they decided to, because he kept getting worse, they admitted him to the hospital.
Yeah.
And just had him there. And when he'd been there for a week, I was like, okay, I'm about 4 hours away. And they were still like, you're going to get home soon. So no worries. You're getting home in the week that's coming up. So, but I was like, I'm going to go visit. So I went there on Sunday.
Okay.
Then they scanned his lungs again on Monday. And in the evening, we got the message that it wasn't pneumonia. It was lung cancer.
Oh, wow.
And, they were like, we're just going to have to figure out what to do. So we will meet up with you in tomorrow morning or tomorrow before noon and figure out what to do. And they were like, when we then met with them on Tuesday, they were like, there's nothing we can do. It's so prolonged that we can't even move him out of the room because he needs the oxygen that he's getting. And he was still with us at this time, but so he understood what was happening.
Yeah.
And then on Thursday he died.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. But it was like from going from the weekend or the end of the week before, from being like, oh, he's going to get to go home, it's fine, for him dying on Thursday, and it was surreal, to be honest.
Right. Yeah.
And I know it's a weird place to start, but the thing is that that's what got me into the path that I'm on now.
Okay.
Because I realized that in that year before that he had been sick, no one really asked him or asked my mother how she was doing. They were all asking, how's he doing? They were not asking her. I think I asked her once or something like, are you okay? And then I realized just actually the same weekend that my dad has had his 70th birthday.
Yeah.
Me and my now husband, we moved in together in a new house.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband has MS. So that's multiple sclerosis. And that's an illness there's no cure for. And it tends to get worse and worse and worse for a lot of people, at least.
Okay.
And I just realized, okay, so who's going to take care of me when he can't anymore? Not that he's taking care of me, but emotionally and like if I fall and break my leg or whatever, usually in a partnership, you take care of each other, right? But when you have illness of that caliber in your life, there's nothing, there's no one to take care of you at some point, right?
Wow.
So I was kind of trying to figure out, okay, where can I read something about that? Where can I get information about being in this position? And I was like, there is nothing.
Wow.
So
there was no information that you, when you looked to see what about the caregivers.
Yeah. And I was looking for a book or something and I couldn't find anything. So I'm the kind of person that's, well, then I have to write it. So I did that. Well, I did a little bit of investigating or researching first about, is it just me or are there actually people who feel the same, that they would like a book like this?
Yeah.
And I ended up interviewing 15 other caregivers who were either the child of, the parent of, the caregiver of, or siblings to someone who was long-term seriously ill within different types of illnesses. So I have their stories in the book, and then I have, I think, 5 or 6 interviews with professionals, psychologists, that kind of backs the stories and backs the tips I'm giving. And then there's my own story. And then approximately half the book is tips and tricks on how to take care of yourself, because that's the important thing, right? If you can't take care of you, or if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. Kind of like in the airplane, remember to put on your own oxygen mask first. So the book is in Danish and I called it, I'm Also Important. Remember yourself as a caregiver. Yeah. And it's because we tend to set the other person first.
Right. Well, yeah, that's where the focus, it's interesting. If you think of it, like the focus goes to the person who is ill, which of course they need that focus. But if you think of it a little bit like, I don't know, like a spotlight, like the spotlight is on them, right? Because it needs to be, of course. But if you think of that power source for the spotlight, like what if, you know, what if the light bulb runs out? What if, you know, the energy, the electricity runs out? Like there is no, there's no source to then be able to be the help. And I'm sure burnout must come into play. Exactly. I love that what you're talking about with the book is stories, and individual stories, because I feel like so many times we learn from stories and we learn that we're not alone if we're in this situation. And you've talked to many, many people in with varying scenarios. So that sounds amazing. Like what a great resource.
Thank you. And actually someone told me, one of the girls I interviewed who were the child of someone who was ill, was saying like, but you know what, whenever illness hits like that, it's not just the person who's sick. It's also the family. It's not only that one person whose life alters dramatically. Everyone is in shock and everyone needs help, but we're just not thinking about it.
Yeah, probably until afterwards, right?
Exactly.
And then you might go through certain stages of shock, denial, regret, grief all at once.
And even if, like, not all serious illness ends up with death, you can get cured, or you can have, like, MS, for example. You don't die from MS, but you die with it. So it's most people, few people die of it, but there's just, it's just a lifelong illness that you have, right? But in some cases you also get out on the other side, and then there's a whole different dynamic going into place as well. So there's a lot of psychology and there's a lot of, like, just dynamics going into a family that has those kind of issues in their family. And in Denmark, where I'm living, I don't remember the stats quite. I think it was 1 in 3 get cancer before they're 70.
Wow.
which means that that's a lot of caregivers, a lot of families.
It is. Right? Two-thirds of the population are then caregivers, possibly. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's wild that we had on the show on episode 9, Wilmeen Blake, who has MS and is a tremendous runner.
Oh, amazing.
She's run. There's a race called MS Run the US. Mm. And so she's run a lot with that and raised a lot of money. She's been a longtime runner, and I'm just amazed at like the fortitude and strength that she's bringing with this kind of idea of doing what you can while you can.
Oh yeah.
You know, so
I did last year, or was it last spring, we have something called You Run here, where the idea is that they have like, I think it's 13 different what's it called, foundations, like the MS Foundation, Cancer Society, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Charities. That's it.
Yeah.
And then you sign up for the race, and then you choose a charity you want to support.
Oh, so it's and a then group you can event.
Yeah, so then you can like put out in your network saying, "Hey, I'm supporting. Do you want to donate some money?"
Oh, great.
But last year it got canceled, right? Oh. But they didn't cancel the fundraising part of it. So what I did is that I made a group on Facebook saying auctions for charity.
Oh,
in
great.
Again, in Danish. But so what I did is that I went out to my entire network. I even wrote small companies or even bigger companies that I don't know and asked them like, "Hey guys, I'm doing this thing. I'm going to auction off all of the things I can get my hands off or hands in. And then all the money will be donated through that."
Oh, great.
Thing. So we raised about $10,000.
Wow.
For that spring thing. It was a lot of work, but it's amazing doing that. I love doing projects like that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all about helping other people, kind of my drive.
That's the drive, right? So helping others, right? That's like really like been the focus of a lot of the information that you've put out. I know you have a YouTube channel. The idea of being a reflection mentor, like I think and then
helping
also
others.
Helping others, reflect. Right?
Mm.
Yeah.
And so, actually what that kind of did helped me get up. Well, then I was supposed to be a speaker and go out to the societies like MS Society, their local kind of things, and do speaking on the book and on the topic of taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit. So
Okay.
But it's okay, right? But it kind of made me realize also the way that I, the other thing that's always interested me is small business owners, solopreneurs, helping them and trying to build community around that.
Yeah, makes a big difference. It's huge.
It really does. And what I realized is that, well, I'm really good at planning. I'm really good at creating accountability for other part or other people. Mm-hmm. So I kind of figure out, well, then I'm going to go that way. So I've been building, like you said, I just started my YouTube channel, and trying to kind of help people and get them started and get them going with their own business. And I have a Danish membership that's all about life and reflection. And so I'm kind of in these three different camps, actually, life and reflection, the smart business planning and kind of this whole business aspect. I have a master's degree in business. And then the last thing is kind of this caregiver, kind of taking care of yourself aspect.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But it's so interesting, like all of it, right? So it's really hard to choose a specific focus, which is why this is also getting a bit all over the place.
Well, I think the wonderful thing is that you have so much to share. And I think, you know, having a master's in business, and there are so many people out there that don't have a master's in business, like myself, but find themselves as, like, I guess you can call it like the accidental business person. You know, it's like, we love what we do, you know, especially with COVID. I've been in conversation with other yoga teachers and Pilates instructors, and you know, it's like when everything shut down, everybody went online and they just got a Zoom account and grabbed, you know, whatever students wanted to come with them and keep going. And I think that the big drive behind that was, you know, to just try to support each other in keeping going throughout this difficult time. And I think that's part of the theme, you know, with the caregiving as well, trying to keep each other going through a difficult time. And it really is keeping each other going, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it brings back, you know, memories. There's another piece of the puzzle that I think that I don't know if this came up in any of your stories, but if you have siblings that don't live in the same area, and then there is the sibling that is local, that really takes the brunt of really dealing with the illness, and then there's a sibling that is farther away. They, number one, they don't have the chance or opportunity to be with the person who is ill as much, but they don't really get to shoulder the responsibility as much as the person who's local. So do you have any experience with that? And like, what have been some solutions, do you think, like for that? I think it's hard on all ends, you know?
I think you're so right. And I think it's hard in different ways, because for the one I'm thinking you're speaking about, ill parents with children, I think it's like, it's hard to be the one that's there because it's expected of you to help and do a lot. And even if you're not, then if you're not living with the person or the parent, right, then you even also have bad conscience that you're not there all the time. And the person being living away from it also has that for not being there and can't being there, right? I think it's about talking about it. So it's about being really open about what is it we need, because you don't want to end up resenting your family for one way or another. And
hard.
If you, as a grown-up child, is living away from your, let's say, mom and dad or dad, and one is really sick, give yourself the opportunity to not be there all the time. Be okay with actually going home and taking a break.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on, of course, if they're like with my dad 3 days away from dying, then do whatever feels right. But if you can see this is something that's going to be dragging, that's going to be a long-term thing, remember that no matter what, you are the most important person in your life. Because if you're not there, it doesn't matter to you, right? So when my dad died, I went to see a psychologist. And one of the things she said, she made this exercise with me saying, okay, so list all of the things you have going on in your life right now.
Okay.
And then order them. Like, what's the most important? What then, what then, what then? I was on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I was important to me, but I think I was down on a fifth or sixth place.
Yeah.
And my now husband was on the first place, right? And she was like, Diana, you need to be at least same level. You need to be at either a first place or a shared first place.
Okay.
Because shared if you, place, if,
that's
yeah, right. Yeah, because also sometimes it will be too hard for people to acknowledge that they're more important than the person that's ill. So that's why shared first place is a good idea, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't take care of yourself, you're not able to take care of anyone else. And then someone is going to say, oh, I can totally put my kids first all the time and I can put everyone else first. The thing is, if you put yourself first, the time and the energy you have and the focus you have on them is even better. So you might put them first, but then your first gets better or gets worse than your second if you put yourself first. Does that make sense?
Wait, we have to, I lost you
yeah.
for a second.
Yeah,
so one more time.
I figured it was kind of weird in my own head as well. If you, when you put others first, let's say that they get 50% of your energy, because that's all you actually can give them, even though you're putting them first, because your own batteries run down.
Right.
So if you charge your own battery first, take care of yourself first, you will actually be able to give them 70%.
Much more focus, right? Exactly. Probably you'll be in a better mood too, right?
Exactly. So that's why it's so important that even though you're not putting them first anymore, they're still getting more help and getting more better. Of you.
They're getting better support.
Yeah, right? A better because version of you.
Their support is better. I guess if you liken it to, if you had, I don't know, my vision is going to this idea of one of those houses that is on a cliff and then you have the support beams.
Mm.
So if you focus on the support beams, then the house is going to be able to stand better. But if you don't focus on the support beams, then
just try and make the house look pretty.
Right. It's not, but the foundation is not going to be there and it's not going to be as strong. The whole thing is not going to be as stable. So
exactly.
Yeah. So have you found, I'm thinking about this idea of the stories from your book, like, have you found similarities in the stories of the caregivers, like common themes that like, if, you know, if someone is going into, or just finding out now that they have a loved one that will have a long-term illness, like what themes have you found that might help someone like that?
Okay. There's like... The thing is, when someone just realized that a person that they love is seriously ill, you can't reach them. One, they're in a state of shock and they are going to do whatever's in their power to help and put themselves back in line. And that's why it's so important that when it's something that's long-term,
mm-hmm.
you need to... Because if you stay on that drive, you're going to burn out real fast, right?
Okay, yeah.
You can do that for a period. Like, for example, my dad dying, I was there for not even a week. And my mom had been there, right? But the family in general, it was like 14 days. You can be mm-hmm. on alert mode for that amount of time. But mm-hmm. my husband has had MS for, 15 years or something. You can't be on high alert for 15 years.
It's not sustainable. Okay.
Exactly. So my best, and I know this is might be stupid advice actually, but my very best advice is to find the information on how you take care of yourself before someone gets ill. Because having the habits, having it in your life, taking mm-hmm. care of yourself
mm-hmm.
is so important when you're put out in stressful situations.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to sleep and eat well and exercise if it's already a habit for you. And those three things next to breathing are the most important things.
What were those three things again?
Sleeping, mm-hmm. exercising, and eating well.
Okay. So sleeping, exercising, and eating well.
Yes. But the most important thing you do for yourself is breathe.
Okay.
So because if you don't, then...
Right.
So
like breathing practices, like
just breathing in general, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that I actually tell people when I'm having speaking engagements, I'm telling them to just try and stand still and take 3 to 5 deep breaths.
Mm-hmm.
If you're feeling real stressed, if there's a lot going on, you cannot be calm. Well, you cannot be not calm in your head and your body at the same time. So it affects each other, right? So if you're stressed out, your body will be stressed out. So if you use your breathing to mm-hmm. get your stress level down, your head will get less stressed out as well. So just beautiful. As well.
One affects the other.
Exactly. And if you know that you're going to be having a difficult conversation with the one that's sick or with the children or with the doctor or someone, and you know that there's a possibility that it will be very emotional or you will get mad or whatever it is, take those deep breaths to start. Okay. And then also stop and reflect upon the questions you are asked before mm-hmm. just answering, because you get so much more clarity from it. You will be able to give much better answers yourself and mm-hmm. have a much better understanding of what you're actually being asked or what you're being told.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're reminding me of, have you heard of Chris Voss?
I'm really bad with names, to be honest.
Okay. So I've just recently found Chris Voss on YouTube, and his profession was, he was a hostage negotiator. And some things that he talks about are, one of the tools he has is the way you speak, and it's slower. He calls it his late night FM DJ voice.
Yeah.
So I guess if you had to imagine, you know, or you're on a late night FM DJ, you know, radio show, it would be slower, more calm. And I think that the physicality of literally slowing things down, probably breathing more, right, could really have an effect. You know, I love that you suggest just kind of having that habit in place, and then, you know, should the, you know, the event arise that you find out that you have someone, you know, a loved one that has an illness that would potentially be a long-term illness, that you have the tools in place already.
And actually, they are also very much likely to help you not get ill yourself, both in the aspect that you're not going to be as stressed if something happens, but also just for yourself, your own body is going to be way better off if you eat healthy, get enough sleep, and get exercise, right? One of the most amazing, interesting things I found while I was researching for the book is that, and I actually just saw an article about it today. There's, I think, a Danish scientist actually who figured out that when we sleep, our brain is not sleeping. It's doing maintenance. And what that means is that, like, our body has this lymph system that cleans up the toxins of our body, right? But that doesn't work in the brain. But that's what sleep does for our brain. And that means if we don't get enough sleep, we don't get the toxins that build up in our brain during the day. We don't get those cleaned out as thoroughly. So getting about 8 hours of sleep each night is really important. And it also helps prevent diseases like dementia. And the same for exercise, running or doing something equivalent to running 3 days a week for 45 minutes is really a good idea. I just read a book called, the Real Happy Pill, I think it's called. I'll give you a link. Do you know that book?
I think we discussed it once briefly.
Yeah.
The Real Happy Pill.
Yeah, it's by a guy called Anders Hansen. I think he's Swedish. But it's, I'll give you the link so you can share it in the show notes.
Okay.
It's really, really interesting because it's all about what exercise does for you. So he goes into about illness. He goes into when you're stressed, that what's actually happening is that your amygdala in your brain is attacking and it's in stress mode. But when you're not getting enough exercise, then the barriers that's supposed to help you get de-stressed, they shrink. They physically shrink. Getting exercise will, so that's going to, that happening is going to be a downward spiral, right? Mm-hmm. So really getting exercise will help those build up again and help you be more resistant towards stress. And also it helps, exercise helps more brain cells. Actually, you get more brain cells from exercising. So it's such an interesting book. It dives into the research, but there's just so much interesting in it about why exercise is really important. And I, to be honest, I'm not running because I haven't gotten myself around to do that yet. But I do have a treadmill desk. So I walk.
A treadmill desk. That sounds awesome.
So, well, I have a what's it called? A desk that goes up and down. And then I bought a treadmill.
A standing desk.
Yes, that's the word.
A standing desk.
Yeah. That's and then amazing. I have this treadmill underneath so I can be walking and working at the same time. It's not as good as going for a run, but it's better than sitting still.
Yeah. Oh my God. And I think, such a great tool, I think, given that so many people are much more spending much more time on their computers than exactly. ever before.
And you're more focused if you move. Well, so if you do that, you actually learn better.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is not from a book. This is something I don't remember where I read it. But in a year, if you mm-hmm. stand for 3 hours a day by your desk instead of sitting,
mm-hmm.
you will lose the same amount of calories that you would if you were running 7 marathons.
Wow.
Yeah. That motivated me. I don't know about you, but...
Oh my gosh. That's pretty profound. Just yeah. standing.
Standing 3 hours a day, every day of the work week,
uh-huh.
will help you lose as many calories as if you ran 7 marathons
wow.
in a year. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's
all amazing. Of these small fun facts, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that you hit on an important point. Like, what are things that might actually be a motivating factor to make it happen? You know, I mean, it's like, it's the difference between talking about something and actually doing it. You know, what are the things that are going to be, you know,
yeah, motivating.
Motivating it enough to make it happen.
I think right? also knowing what kind of person you are mm-hmm. in that aspect is really important. I started something called 75 Hard, which it's actually more of a mental thing than it's a challenge, but you get these tasks you need to do every day. So you need to do two sets of 45 minutes of exercise. One has to be outside. You have to drink a gallon of water. You have to take a progress picture of yourself each day. You have to be on some kind of diet. And then you need to read 10 pages of something that's not a comic book or a novel or something relevant, right?
Uh-huh.
So the exercise and the food, it's just that. So for me, it's walking because that's still more exercise than I would get otherwise. Mm-hmm. And the food for me is we cut out sugar, gluten, and lactose. Okay. So that might seem extreme for some people. That's what we chose to do, right?
Yeah.
But for me, if I had planned starting that, I wouldn't have done it. Like okay. that, but I heard someone talk about it. And then a week later, I heard someone talk about it. And I've been thinking that seems so hard, mm-hmm. but we'd been talking about changing anyways. And then on Sunday, I was just like, tomorrow I'm going to start. And then I started, then I went around the house and threw everything out. Okay. And then we started. So, wow. or I started, my husband is not, not quite in, but he's still doing quite a lot about it.
So what's the name of it again then?
75 Hard.
75 Hard. Like yeah. H-A-R-D?
Yeah, because it is hard. I'm on day 52 and
so it's 75 days. 75 days of doing something that's hard to do.
Yes. So the thing is you need to do all of these things. I bought the app. There's an app, it's like, I don't know, maybe $5 or something. I don't know the equivalent in dollars. But so I take off everything I do during the day.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you miss something even once,
yeah,
you have to start over.
You so go back to square one.
At day 60, if you miss doing your picture of the day, you start over.
Wow. That's intense. That's intense.
It is, but it's also my energy level is so good compared to before.
So you feel a huge difference. That's good.
Yes. So this is me taking care of me.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Right. So figuring out these things, and I have a lot of things going on. I'm doing collaborations with people. I have a job. I started a little bit writing on another book, but I'm developing workshops with other people, and I'm doing my YouTube channel, and I'm doing, I set a goal for myself that I want to, I'm going to say this out loud. I want to make 100 videos by the end of the year.
Okay.
Which is a lot, but I set that goal. So I always set huge goals because that's what motivates me.
Yeah.
Kind of like the 75
the
moon,
hard. Right. And you'll land in the stars, even if you don't.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
exactly.
Can I share with you so a little important. Bit like, you know, just this idea of like going gluten-free and I think, did you say sugar-free?
Gluten, sugar, and lactose.
Gluten, sugar, and
lactose. We're eating vegetables and meat, more or less.
Yeah. I had this experience when my kids were little, that they were pretty much once a year, it would be ear infection season. It was just like one or the other would end up with an ear infection. And it turned out that every time we went into the pediatrician, every time they looked in their ears, someone would be like on the verge of an ear infection. So it would look like, oh, there's a little bit of fluid. There's a little bit of fluid. There's a little bit of fluid. And it got to the point where I think it's not uncommon that a lot of children end up getting a surgery to move the tubes in their ears so that they will not be getting ear infections. So we had this conversation where my oldest, I don't know what age they were at the time. I'm guessing maybe 10 or 11 or maybe even smaller, maybe 7, but it just seemed extreme to me to have a surgery. So when the doctor suggested it in the moment, you know, that we might consider the surgery to, you know, alleviate the problem of the ear infections, I think maybe she saw the look on my face and I was like, kind of this terrified, like deer in the headlights look, like, oh, wow, surgery, that sounds big. And then she continued to speak and she said, or, you know, we could try, you know, going gluten-free, dairy-free, and peanut-free. That was the three things, right? So when you listed your three things, I was like, oh yeah, this, this, and this. Okay. So for us, it was gluten-free, dairy-free, and peanut-free. And at the time, you know, we tried it, you know, and we did it for 1 year. To go peanut free means no peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for a kid. That's a very profound thing.
It's very American, though.
Yes, it is. It is. PBJs are, you know, just like a part of like a lunch, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But they had been. But it's interesting because we went through a process. It was like here are the rules, right? So, okay, it's either surgery or try this. And so here are the rules of the game. If you want to go this way, it's like the game of life, you know, you're in your little car, you can turn left, you can turn right. Right. So we turned right. And the rules of the game were go gluten-free, dairy-free, peanut-free, and let's see, you know? So we did it and it was a process. So the first thing we did was I was, you know, in charge of the groceries. And so like, but I went out and bought all the junk food, gluten-free things I could find. Cause I thought, well, if I'm going to go gluten-free, I'm going to have to get replacements for the things that I had, which was a terrible idea. All like tasted like cardboard. It was just not satisfying at all. What I didn't realize, just going a more simple route was just going to be much more
fulfilling.
Fulfilling, gratifying, tasty, you know, basically, you know, vegetables, grains, you know, and just kind of going like a simple, more just real food route was much better than all the junk food, gluten-free stuff that was on the shelves at the time. They have much better stuff now, right? That's gluten-free and dairy-free and all of that. We did it. And for the first time in forever, I remember going to the pediatrician's office and they looked in my kid's ears and they said, for the first time, it was amazing, they're clear.
Yay.
Yay. Amazing. Right. So no surgery, you know, for us, that was, you know, it strikes me at how profound, like, you know, if you think of it like a game a little bit and you cut out these three things, you find what is satisfying elsewise and probably healthier. How profound a change that can make. Yeah. So I love that you refer to this as your variation on self-care.
Yeah, it is, because I do feel so much better, more energy, and just I lost weight and it feels better. And even I know this sounds, it might sound like we're going overboard, but actually we also decided like we're just not eating processed food. We're making things ourselves and I forgot a really important part of the 75 hard, by the way. No cheat meals, no alcohol.
Oh, no cheat meals, no cheat day.
And no alcohol.
And no alcohol.
No alcohol is usually what trips people up, right?
Right.
The thing is that it's not easy. It seems like it's really hard, and it is, but at the same time, it's really not.
Okay.
It's like it's decided, making a decision. Right? Yeah. And it's just, it's so nice to know that. I had once or twice that I was kind of like, oh, I really want to eat that chocolate bar when I was shopping, right?
Yeah.
Grocery shopping. And I was kind of like, but it's
palate
making,
adjusts, though.
Yes, but also just making the decision made it not interesting when I went to shop.
Yeah.
It was like, it's not on my radar at the same way it was before.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my younger teen is vegan. And the way they put it to me was, wow, mom, you know, when we go to the store, when I see things, I look for what I think is food, you know? And so basically what it does is it saves a lot of time in the grocery store because you're narrowed down to a certain section of foods, you know, and for them, I think, it simplified things a certain amount. It was like, I look at this. This is what I'm choosing from. And the myriad of things that are possible to choose from, like in the vast majority of the store, it's like you don't even have to bother looking at that, you know? Like, so I think it simplified things, you know, which
it
is
really
good.
Does.
Yeah.
It can be quite hard to figure out what to make for dinner when you're new at it, though.
Oh,
to
yeah.
figure out what, okay, so we had coconut milk, but in some coconut milks, there's this thing that makes it smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's added, right?
It's the additive,
so we're like,
right?
Yes, that was the word. And it was like, we really want to get away from those.
Yeah.
So figuring out, okay,
Once you know which brand to get, that is the one that is very simply has just what you want in it and nothing else more, then you know that.
And you know what we notice once in a while, then it's like the other day I was looking at my husband's tea and it was this Irish cream tea. And I was looking, okay, so it has chocolate and caramel and something else in it. And we're like, that's not going to be used anymore either because... It's again, why do that when you can find something that tastes just as well where they didn't add all of that?
That's the key, right? If there's something that's just as good, but it doesn't have the thing that you don't want, then you choose.
Exactly.
That.
Exactly.
I have a question for you, Deanna. So I love this food conversation. I think that it can be so profound to just like make certain choices and say, this is what I'm doing. And then you do it. And I get how then also the sleep can be so important. Literally, it's like your brain is like getting serviced, you know, as you sleep.
Oh, that's a great way to say it.
Yeah. Right. Like, what if you fall into a bad habit and maybe you're not sleeping for one reason or another? Maybe you're falling asleep in front of the TV and then you realize you wake up at 2 a.m. and, you know, it's still on and the lights are on and you haven't brushed your teeth and then you get up and you're up, you know, like what would you suggest for someone who ends up in that situation where they, you know, maybe they're not doing any of the other things that are maybe negative, but they come down to this sleep issue and that's the one way they sort of, you know, might feel like they're failing. What would you do?
Well, one, we all do that. We all more or less at least trip up once in a while, right? The last 2 days I've gone to bed way late. And I know these things. So it's not that just because you know it, you're doing it, because then everybody would be slim and well rested, right?
And in a better mood, I'm sure, right?
Yes, exactly.
The world would really be a happier place.
Exactly. No wars, no hunger, no nothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But a really good way to do it is to set up routines. So like a lot of people are doing morning routines. That's very hyped to start your day off, right?
Yes.
And I definitely...
Very popular.
Yes, I do that. I do my first exercise by walking 45 minutes with my dog. Then I drink some water. Well, I actually drink water before walking the dog. But then I get home, drink some more water. I empty the dishwasher. I do the reading. And then I'm kind of ready for my day, right?
Yeah.
But doing that at night as well, having an evening routine, switching off your screens about an hour before you go to bed. I
That's
know
hard
it's insane,
one.
But try picking up a real book.
A paper book. Ooh.
Yes, exactly. And you can get them on Amazon or Book Depository or whatever, yeah. Or in the thrift store or whatever that's called. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Maybe you can borrow one if you feel like yeah. it. The you know, library,
they,
right?
They have this thing in certain neighborhoods where there's like a give a book.
Take a book.
Yeah, it's just yeah. like, literally, it's like a bookshelf, you know, and it's usually near a cafe, not always, but it's like this little stand, and it's like usually there's some kind of plastic weatherproofing around it, but
yeah.
you just bring a book that you're done with and leave it there, or pick a different book up, and I love that. That's you know an offering that is.
Yeah, I just walked past one of those yesterday or okay. Sunday, so that's a thing here as well. So and
oh, that's yeah. fun. Some people in their laundry rooms, they have like a...
Yeah, and it's a really good idea. It's also like, let's not waste a lot of resources, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the other things we did. And this is like, we tried to cut out all of the plastic in our kitchen.
Ooh.
Because mm-hmm. my husband was listening to a podcast with someone who'd studied how all of these microplastics get into our food.
Oh,
so whenever we okay. take something home, we try and take it out of the plastic and put it into glass bowls and stuff like that. I know that I sound insanely healthy and really like I'm so like saint-like, but I'm really not. And I wanted it to say something before. I want to get back to the habits as well, but
yeah,
just to set this into perspective, about maybe 7 years ago, a bit longer,
yeah,
more or less all I ate was rice, pasta, and tuna. I've okay. been so freakingly picky my entire life.
Okay.
So going from that to what I'm doing now, eating like all kinds of vegetables, a lot of chili on things, like I hadn't developed my...
Your palate.
Yeah.
Your palate.
I like everything I ate was tasteless, more or less.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So... You can do that. Like I change in that way, do it nice and slowly, but just cutting out sugar and really sweet things from your diet
yeah.
will really, really help because it allows other things to not seem as sour or as bitter
wow.
because you don't have that all the time, really, really sweet pole to compare it to.
Yeah. Wow.
Amazing. So I'm just, I just wanted to say, it's not that I'm, I hear myself speaking and yeah. thinking, wow, you sound insane.
Well,
but it's
the good thing about, you know, I'm so grateful for our conversation because I think it's great. Like probably like if there's like to have the perspective of like, well, what you're used to eating is a certain thing. And if it's like a limited amount of things or whatever the amount of things in is, there's probably, you know, a lot of other things that people haven't tried. Like, you know, I know, you know, I remember my niece, like when I was visiting my sister at a certain point when they were kids, like it was only plain pasta. That was it.
Yep.
Right? So you're not alone. And like, that was it for her. And, you know, to develop your palate and then introduce different foods can be a process. I had a friend who decided they would add one new vegetable in a year, you know,
well,
you might just do it on a different time schedule, maybe one a month or, but
that's
they,
progress, they, right? As yeah. long as you're not, as long as you're not moving forward, you're actually moving backward.
Okay,
so,
right.
Progress is great, right?
Yeah.
And
but you have to have the why behind it too. Like, why would you? Yeah. And I think you always hear about putting a rainbow on your plate, like to get different nutrients. So, you know.
Actually, I would say if there's anyone out there who has kids that are very picky,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say force them to eat, but I'm going to say be very adamant about getting them to taste things and eat things because as a grown-up, even as a late teenager, when you start going out with people, going out to eat with your friends and stuff like that, it gets really social awkward to be picky.
Okay.
Because when I was like 17, 18, 20, whenever I was to go out with friends and even up till my like start 30s, it was always depending on me where we eat because mm-hmm. I was a picky one.
Okay.
And I felt like feeling like I took a lot of options away from everyone. And then going in there like, Hey, can I, let's see, can we get pasta here? Can I get the sauce on the side and stuff like that? Being really, I wouldn't say annoying. It's just I should get something to eat, right? But it just became hard for me
Okay, good to
because
know.
I was being difficult. Like I wasn't, but I kind of was because everyone around me had to kind of hone in on me, right? To figure out, okay, can we actually take Diana here?
Okay.
Do you get what I
Yeah,
mean?
yeah, yeah.
So if you're panic par parent meh, if you're a parent that
Yeah.
has a picky kid, I would definitely do a lot to try and make them eat. I'm not mad at my parents for not doing it, but I'm sad that they didn't.
Okay. Yeah, one possible way to do that. I have a friend who what they do or they did with their kids was they had them just try something, once a year. Because your palate can change, so there's like, okay, you don't have to eat all of it, but just try it. And so that seemed like a good middle ground, I had one client that I know was forced to eat spinach and they will never eat it again.
Yeah,
Like they had a
there's a
nanny that
fine
would.
line.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a fine line. Yeah. But it seems like, okay, just try one bite and then you don't have to eat the rest of it. That seems like a lot more possibility around there without being too forceful.
I haven't looked into it, but I think it's something along the line of you need to taste something 7 times to like it. So you could also do something like trying to put it in
That's
stuff
good to
like,
know.
yeah, I'm not quite
Yeah.
sure if it's that number,
Yeah,
but
but
it takes
to have
time,
that
right?
general idea that it, just to be introduced to something maybe more than once and a couple of times before it sort of might
Then if your
appealing.
kids like peas, then find something that's either similar in size or in taste for the next thing for them to learn to eat. Because if similar in taste, you can also say, well, you love peas, and this tastes a little bit like
A
peas,
little bit like
not
that.
quite, but a little bit. And
Yeah.
then try to make them excited about it that way.
So
I'm so not, I don't have any kids, so this is really easy for me to say. Just wanna, yeah.
it's a definitely a process in
Yeah,
and of itself.
it
But this
is.
is kind of great to know, like keeping with this theme of sleeping well, eating well, and exercising, as well as breathing and cultivating those kind of tools, as you go, right? So that you're going to be more prepared for anything, really. So
Exactly.
if a loved one becomes ill and if it's a long-term illness, you're going to be in a better place. You're reminding me, I went through the school called the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. And I remember going there and I was early at the time. I was meeting a friend there and I was early, which was not characteristic of me. I'm usually like the late person in the group, right? So I was early. And so they asked a few people to be volunteers to be like their sample person. They were going to give a demonstration and they had me fill out a questionnaire and then they did an interview with me in front of the room. And I remember the thing that was so interesting was they had you write down what you ate as a child, what you ate, a year ago, and what you eat now. And it was so interesting to see, that it really didn't change that much. So that's, like what you eat when you're young, it can really like become like just what you know and then what you do. So I found that very inspiring. I probably went a little overboard, like being the food police with my kids when they were little, and then things change over time too, it's interesting to think that we want to just do our best to kind of, fortify ourselves. So creating a sleep routine, I love that, right?
And actually creating not just a sleep routine, but a going to bed routine, because what it is, your brain likes to preserve energy. So by making habits and routines, it needs to use less energy. So getting, like, for example, saying that if you at I'm I get up at 5 o'clock usually, which means I need to go to bed at 9 to get 5 hour or 8 hours of sleep. It's 9:30 right now for me, so I'm actually past my bedtime.
Uh-oh.
Well, but it's on special occasions I do that, right?
Okay.
But what that means is, if I then choose to say, okay, so at 8, what I do is I walk the dog, and I then, when I get home, I sit down and read for half an hour, then I go brush my teeth, and then I go to bed. If I do that same thing every time, my brain is going to know that this is my, that's it's the go signal for it to start winding down.
That's great.
It's this process of getting your body and your brain ready to mm-hmm. go to sleep. That way you will also have an easier time falling asleep.
Beautiful. I love that.
It's the same thing if you want to create a habit of focus. Mm-hmm. Find some music that will get you in flow and use that same music, because within a period of time, then as soon as you put your earbuds in, if that's what you're doing, then your brain will know, this is my cue to go into focus.
That's your cue. It's like Pavlovian, right? You hear the music,
yes,
you know you're ready to get in the flow. I love that. So you can create routines for a lot of different things. So sleep,
you can.
A sleep routine, whether it's the morning routine that's become very popular, right? Sleep routine, a work routine. I love the idea.
Oh, that's a whole different topic for me to get all
the work routine. We'll have to revisit that one. I love that. We could revisit that one, definitely.
For sure.
So I love though that setting up, the whole idea of putting your own oxygen mask on first, taking care of yourself so that you can take care of others, should they end up having to deal with a long-term illness. Makes a lot of sense. And, just continuing to build on good sleep, eating well, exercising, and the breath.
Can I add a small thing to the evening routine?
Yeah.
Write 3 things down that you're grateful for that happened through the day, or start your morning routine with 3 things you're grateful for.
Yeah.
Reflect. I'm like you said in the beginning, I think you did, that I do this. I'm trying to figure out, I do a lot of reflection things. So with my Danish side of my business, going into the English a little bit as well with the YouTube channel. But this whole life and reflection thing, figuring out, what is it that you're grateful for? What is it that's been happening throughout the day? I just recently heard this thing that I want to start doing myself, is a 1-story-a-day journal. I don't think that's what it's called, but what it was is that for each day you write down your most positive experience that day.
Oh, that's great.
Both because it helps your brain focus on the positive, which is better in general, but also because it makes you remember the days from each other. So when you go back and look at your diary, it will be much easier for you to remember the days and remember life.
Mm, right. And why not focus on the good, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. Let me ask you a question, Deanna. If you had to recommend maybe some tips, like simple tips or tricks for our listeners to take home with them, what would you recommend?
Within what?
right. Yeah. Let's see. We've talked about helping loved ones when they are ill, and taking care of yourself. We've talked about focus, right? We've talked about sort of preparing yourself all along, right? By taking good care of your sleep, your eating, your exercise.
I know.
Yeah. So any one
figure
of those.
Figure out what you love. What gives you energy?
Oh, that's great.
How do you fill up your batteries?
How do you fill up your batteries? So figure out what it is that helps you fill up your own battery.
And something you're doing for you. Something that's not helping someone else, something that's for you.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So figure out what it is that helps you, that helps refuel your own battery. That's excellent.
Something that makes you happy, because sleeping is also fueling your battery. Yeah. But something that really gives you joy. When you're a caregiver, when someone gets seriously ill, people tend to draw away from them. So a lot of people in that situation also lose a lot of friends.
Oh.
So figuring out, are there anyone you can grab onto? Not grab onto, that sounds so negative, but
connect
is there
with.
Something, yes,
yeah,
that you connect can connect with that wants to hear about you, that wants to be there for you.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes you happy, someone you can go out and have a cup of tea with, or maybe it's taking up, I don't know, soccer again, or
revisiting a hobby.
Yes, something that you enjoyed doing as a kid, writing poems or writing or riding. So writing like with a pen and paper, or riding on a horse.
Yeah.
Or whatever it could be, something that you're doing for you because it makes you happy.
That sounds good.
And it's okay. That's important part. And if you feel like you cannot go away from the one that's ill, think about 5 minutes to start and then build up, because it's really, really, really important.
Take a 5-minute vacation.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Go outside the house, stand there for 2 minutes, see that the world doesn't crumble from it. Go back in. Tomorrow you're doing 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to go around the block. Then you're going to go for a longer ride or a longer walk or whatever you're doing, right?
Yeah.
Build it up. Rome wasn't built in one day. I hate that saying, but it's actually really good right here, right? It's a habit change. It's a mindset change. Mm-hmm. It takes a bit of time.
Yeah.
And you were asking earlier, and I don't think I actually answered, what you could do if you were falling into your or falling out of your good habits as well, other than doing the routines. Oh, so I did answer, but another way would be to have someone help you stay accountable.
Oh, an accountability partner.
Exactly.
That's
so
great.
Find a coach or a friend or someone who can help you stay accountable for whatever goal it is you set for yourself. Mm-hmm. If it's going to bed at the same time, if it's whatever it is, someone even, there's these websites, I haven't tried them, but I know they're there, where you can say, if I don't reach my goal, I'm going to donate $10,000 or whatever dollars to this anti-charity. So donating, and then you kind of set in your information and everything, so that if you don't stay with your habit or reach your goal, then the site will withdraw the money from your credit card or your bank account and donate it to whatever it is you've chosen as something that's really not a good idea for you.
So then in order to avoid that, then you really follow through with your goal, right? To set yourself up to really succeed with your goal.
Yes. And you can do it yourself. I read a book by an author I don't remember the name of, but what he said was to he had a $100 bill. Mm-hmm. And he put it by his door with a lighter. And then he said, if I don't go to the gym, I need to burn $100 bill.
Wow.
And he'd been going to the gym for 3 years. And it was the same $100 bill, still there.
Still there. That's motivating, because that's a tangible thing that you don't want to do.
Exactly.
You don't want to just literally burn a $100 bill. But
exactly.
I can see how that would be very motivating.
Yeah. And I'm so sorry. I'm just going to keep talking. So
No, I think these are great tips, though. I think it's excellent. Let me ask you a question, Deanna. If our listeners want to find you, where are a couple of places that they can reach you?
Well, they can find my website, which is smartbusinessplanning.com. And then I'm going to give you a link to a site where, if anyone would be interested in, I have this Danish membership that I'm thinking about translating into English. That's Life and Reflection, which is all about giving questions once a week about reflecting on life and worksheets to work on it. Then I will post a link in your show notes. Well, you can. And then, of course, my YouTube channel, Life and Business.
Life and business. Beautiful. That's excellent. So that is wonderful that, you know, I think that I'm so grateful for the information, you know, that we've been able to talk about today. And it's so, I think, going to be so helpful for so many listeners. Thank you so much.
I hope so. And thank you for letting me speak and speak and speak.
I'm grateful. It's so good. I'm so grateful. I would love to have you on for another conversation at some point. Would you be open to coming on the show again?
Of course. Feel free to just reach out and we can do maybe a business theme then or something like that.
Sure. I mean, it's great. I think it'd be wonderful. I think, you know, it's great.
I think it all ties together. That's why I call the YouTube channel Life and Business and Life and Reflection for we're all kind of, we're not just business people or just reflective people or just yoga teachers.
Yeah.
We are humans, right?
Yeah. We're human beings and human beings doing. Mm-hmm. So all together.
Human doings?
I think that, you know, it's all part of the human experience. I think that, you know, the things that we're talking about, you know, the business, you know, kind of reflecting and then also dealing with, you know, illnesses on an ongoing basis and so on. So I will look forward to having another conversation again soon, Deanna. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Until then, I guess bye for now, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks so much for coming. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Based on what we talked about, I made a special download for you entitled Simple Self-Care for Caregivers. You can find a link for it in the show notes, as well as you can find it on my website, www.taylorfitwellness.com. I hope that you have a great rest of your day. We'll look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks. Bye.